This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for June 29th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, you just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our Red Circles landing site. You just click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and you set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside my friend and co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, how are you doing this week?
Mike Spears, we're a month away from Kobe World. Where does the time go? How did we get here? What's going on? I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay, all things considered. How are you, good sir?
You know, I had an interesting night after recording on Tuesday last week.
What you got for me?
So, as people can probably guess by me dating the shows each time, we our regular recording time is Tuesday nights. Pudge is at a point where he is totally fine, like downstairs, if I'm downstairs. But like if I'm recording and if it's something that I know I can't pay attention to, he's still 6 months old. So he's crate trained. He loves his crate. There, people who think crate training is inhumane, there's a lot of like studies done. It's actually fosters their den kind of sensibilities, like the innate wolf side of them. But Pudge did something in his crate last Tuesday that pretty much sent me on a tailspin for the rest of the week.
Okay, well, I'm unaware of this information, so what happened?
Oh, so one of the things I do, because just to keep him like occupied, you know, keeping positive things, like that's the thing about crates. If you're someone that's getting a dog, adopting a dog, and you don't know if they've been crate trained before, the key about crate training is you keep it as positive as possible. Like you feed them in the crate. You give them their favorite toys in the crate. You give them their favorite treats in the crate. And one of his favorite things is Kong, the dog toy monolith Kong. They have like this special toy that is a normal sized dog bone, but on the ends of the dog bone, there are like basically holes in it. So you could like put treats in there. And the idea is that the dog will chew on the rubber and it'll get them moving, it'll get them thinking about how to get the treats out, right? Like it's a pretty simple thing. He ate half of the rubber bone on Tuesday night while we were recording.
That does not seem ideal, Mike Spears. I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't seem good.
Yeah, and as a doctor told me, they were surprised how well Pudge chewed up this bone. Their exact words were rice-sized fragments. Haven't seen a dog done this before. Luckily, they were able to get it all out and he's fine. But I was at a dog emergency room until about 12:30 Tuesday night after our show. And let me tell you, there's no good time ever happening at an animal emergency room, ever. Like I witnessed a woman in the parking lot getting, like while their pet, I assume, was being cared for, go through like a breakup on the phone as I'm sitting in the parking lot, just going like, Christ. Because at this time, Case, I didn't know, like I knew he ate half a bone. I didn't know like if it was lodged, there was going to be obstruction, if he was going to need an x-ray, you know, surgery or anything like that. So I was already in a bad mind state. And then just like, I was laying down on one of the benches they had outside, just looking at the stars. It was a nice weather out there and could hear a lady on her cell phone as loud as possible in a parking lot at 11 o'clock at night, go through a breakup saying, I thought you promised me you'd love me forever. You know, like all that stuff, while I assume that this person's pet was being cared to for a very serious matter. Like, just insane thing. I was like, how is this happening to me? Like, this, well, this is the stuff that happens to me and only me, case.
Well, that rocks. Anyone breaking up in public, as long as it's not you, it is funny. And I know that is cruel, but when you're the third party in a breakup, when a breakup doesn't affect you, it's generally pretty funny. I got a Facebook notification today that the last dog that my parents owned died 3 years ago today. And while I liked that dog and while that was sad when it happened, Mike, I don't know how you do it. You put so much time and energy into caring for this dog, and I just don't have that in me. Obviously, we'll get an update on my love life when we talk about Manscaped a little bit later on in the show, but the girl that I've started seeing, her roommate has a dog, and going over to her apartment and having to be around this dog for any period of time at all is objectively hard for me to do. Like, it's, I don't like animals.
Yeah.
I just don't like animals. And if I had one catastrophe like that, after everything you've been through with Pudge in like 3 months now or 6 months, however long you've had this dog, one incident, I'd be like, you know what? Not for me. And you continue to trudge on. You continue to fight on. I don't know how you do it, but more power to you. Glad that your dog is okay.
You know, it's something that, like, other than like my parents' pets and of course like friends and family's pets, like usually I am not very much like an animal person. Like, crazy allergic to cats. Dogs I'm somewhat allergic to, but I sound and I feel just as well as I did before Pudge came home. So, if, you know, good for me there. But like, you set yourself up, like, and I feel like that, like, any sort of having pets, I think like the best mindset anyone could have is, all right, while this pet is here, while this animal is here, I'm going to try to do my best for the pet. And like this, because I know that, like, just because of the cruelty of the universe, that I'm going to outlive this thing, like, no matter what, unless you have a Galapagos tortoise. And then I probably think you are a drug dealer. But you just kind of have to have that mindset, just because, like, I forgot, like, I'm not going to try to, like, say a idiom out of turn. That's the other show that I do that on. But you just kind of, like, you know, and you kind of steel yourself for it. And I know, like, that. But I mean, you know, he's doing better each day. He is not right now having a Kong bone in his crate. So I think everything's going to be okay. And here's the thing. The vets told me, because of his other issues, stick with Kong or Benny bones or Nyla bones. And I'm like, okay. Now it's like, all right, he's getting these one kind of things. I can't, because of how poor or like how, like, all the stuff he's been through, like, you can't trust him around like rawhide. Like, he's like, is just completely send this dog. Like, he got sick for like 2 weeks and it was just because, like, he ate duck poop once. Like, he has a very sensitive system.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I don't have the patience nor the energy nor the care to deal with an incident like that. Maybe a cat at some point in my life. I would never initiate that cat purchase, but if somebody I was with wanted a cat, I could at least be talked into that. I'm not owning a dog. I don't get it. There's too many other things that I love in life, like Dragon Gate, to deal with the stress of having a pet. I can't do it. I'm very cold-hearted, and I've accepted that.
Yeah. You know, like, I thought my brother was the same way. Like, he famously, after our childhood dog had to be put down, he said, like, I'm never going to have a pet again. I can't do that. And then his fiance has a very sweet elderly Chihuahua mix, and he found a cat that he adopted named Golly. And he's like, now I'm a cat guy. So I could see you ending up that way, Kate.
Yeah, I could see me ending up a cat guy too. If I play my cards wrong, very easily that I become the cat guy in the neighborhood. Mike, if Masato Yoshino plays his cards right, he's going to be retiring 1 month from now. How crazy is that?
It didn't, like of course, like, we've done like a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of stuff that will be coming on Voices of Wrestling on the week of Kobe World and Speedstar Final. But I have a giant whiteboard in one of my rooms in my kitchen where it's a calendar where, like, I write down like all my work stuff, all Pudge's stuff, all the Dragon Gate stuff, all the AEW stuff, all the podcasts I'm doing, just like I have to have it physically in front of me. And writing down August 1st, Speedstar Final on my whiteboard for July, just kind of just, that took me aback. And there was something else that took me aback that came out yesterday, Case, that we wanted to talk about before we got into this weekend's Kobe show. And this was a two-part interview from Sponichi NX that was translated on Reddit by Reddit user NSM1. That is very fascinating because Masato Yoshino does not do very many interviews, and this is a very, very thorough one.
Yeah, especially compared to what we get from the rest of the Dragon Gate roster. I know, you know, especially with New Japan, and that's eventually what I hope Dragon Gate gets to, is just how strong the English language coverage has gotten within New Japan. Their in-depth interviews with guys like Tanahashi, with Shingo and Okada. I would love to see that sort of thing translate to Dragon Gate, but we don't have that at this point yet. But what we do have is somebody who translated an interview from a Japanese publication with Yoshino, and it's the first time, to my knowledge, that we've heard Yoshino talk on the record about his retirement, talk about some of his injuries, and just talk in general, because Masato Yoshino, a man not on social media, a man that we don't know much about, a man that tends to enjoy and keep a pretty private life. So to have a two-part interview, even just briefly touching on things like the Italian connection, was a very exciting read for me.
Yeah, so this is just fascinating. Like, the only other content I know of, like, Yoshino really kind of, like, talking about that kind of stuff was back in the Prime Zone days when they would have, like, this series. It might still be up on the Dragon Gate Network where everyone talked about, like, their special moves, and this was during Monster Express, and he was explaining, like, why his lariat is thin, why his hand is held open and he delivers a slap as a part of his lariat rather than, like, the close fist run through. And he's like, oh, it's from baseball. Like, I played baseball for so long. Baseball is my favorite thing outside of wrestling, and it simulates, like, throwing a baseball. It's a very natural action for me. You just don't get this from Yoshino. Like, that was the most I had before this.
Yeah, I'll just jump right into the interview, and we'll put a link to this in the podcast description if you have not read it yet. It's also on our Twitter at Open Voicegate. But hearing Yoshino talk about his retirement a little bit, and specifically the question being asked of how is your condition now that your retirement has been postponed, and Yoshino saying, I pushed myself a little too hard at the end of 2020 and at the beginning of 2021. The condition of my old neck suddenly worsened and I had to sit out. I couldn't even hold chopsticks because of the numbness and pain. I couldn't lie on my back or face down, and I couldn't lie down, so I couldn't even get into sleeping position. And then he goes on to say, even when I tried to sleep sitting up, I couldn't sleep because of the numbness and pain, and I could only sleep for about an hour and a half a day. In such a situation, there was a treatment called Vital React Therapy in the Kochi Prefecture, and I spent half of the month in Kochi going there, and I managed to come back to this point.
Yeah, so we knew about this place because this is where Yamamura went, like, famously. And it was, like, something that, like, why he wasn't around. But it was like, oh, yeah, no, he's spending half his time in Kochi Prefecture because, like, I remember, I think it was Jay who said on commentary, he said, like, he woke up one day and was like, I can't do anything, like, after all of this. And it's just, you know, like, he talks about how he originally wanted to retire in 2020. Of course, COVID pushed it back. He said that after he injured his neck in 2017, he was already thinking about retirement. Of course, apocryphally, he was told, we could fix your neck here, but you won't be able to wrestle your same style, or we can rehab it and we could see how long you go, but you will have a finite time in the ring. And this kind of, like, follows up on this because he wanted to be the speed star. And he said in 2017, he decided on 3 years since 2020 would have been his 20th anniversary, and I would turn 40. He felt like there'd be a good time to retire some point there. That's why he announced his retirement in 2019. And he thought that in regular 2020, not the bizarre one we went through, that he would spend the rest of the year giving back to the fans who support him. But then, of course, you know, COVID, and he mentions COVID's the reason why it was postponed. And then that was, like, a very heavy first part of it. But the second part of this interview, Case, is really fascinating, talking about him entering wrestling, him and the Italian connection, him leaving the Italian connection, and just kind of, like, overall his legacy in Dragon Gate.
Yeah, specifically, and I saw a few people point this out on Twitter, but somebody asked, or I guess the interviewer asked him about his Tarzan character, Sexy Tarzan, and the Italian connection. And Yoshino said that he had been playing baseball all of his life. He had short hair basically his entire life, and then Ultimo told him to grow his hair out. And Yoshino was basically like, I was in a position where I couldn't say no. I had to grow my hair out. And thus the sexy Tarzan character was born, which is, you know, I mean, look, if Yoshino would have stepped away from wrestling after 2005 when he had done that character for 4 or 5 years, I think his career would have been looked at as a win, let alone the 15 years that followed of various high points at tag team wrestling and trios wrestling and singles wrestling. There's just a lot in here. It's worth the read. Like Mike said, we're going to have plenty of Masato Yoshino coverage throughout the month of July leading up to his retirement. This was just a really nice glimpse into a side of Yoshino that we don't often get to see.
Yeah, and a lot of this, and then it's worth reading, so we're not going to completely go point by point in this thing. A lot of it was talking about how he went from the Brave Gate into the Dream Gate at when he turned 30 on his 10th year anniversary. And I didn't really think of it at the time. This is a guy who's had some nice synchronicity in his career.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, Yoshino's such an interesting guy just to look at. Like, and I think my view of Yoshino as a wrestler has really changed over just the past few years. Because when I was first getting into Dragon Gate, so we're talking 7 or 8 years ago at this point, and going back and watching even a show like Kobe World 2010, I remember just thinking, okay, Yoshino's the fast guy. Yoshino's great in trios matches. I don't know if I buy him as this main event, top of the line star. And not only has my opinion on that just completely changed over, you know, the past 7 or 8 years, but now he is this promotion and something that, you know, I've talked about at length that I'm going to have a big Masato Yoshino piece on voicesofwrestling.com once we get closer to his retirement, which is now very, very soon. But the question of what does Masato Yoshino mean to Dragon Gate is a question that I've asked a lot of people. And they've all had to take a step back and really think about that, because since 2002, basically, he has been a recognizable and intriguing and dynamic figure in this promotion. And once Shima and the Strong Hearts split in 2018, this promotion became Masato Yoshino. And it's incredible to think about, because, again, he could have just been the greatest Open the Brave Gate champion of all time. He could have just been Sexy Tarzan. He could have just been Yoshino of Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino speed muscle, but he has continued throughout his career to take step up and take the next step up and take the next step up, up until, as we talked about, you know, with him pushing himself too hard at the end of 2020, with him continuing to up his game, he put on an amazing performance in the Dangerous Gate 2020 cage match. He put on an amazing performance while he was in the ring in the Final Gate Unit Disbands match. He's continued to up his game until he literally couldn't anymore. And it's been just an incredible career.
Yeah, and it's something that I know that because of the cage match last year, I had to answer my portion of this article of yours very quickly, because we had both the realization of they're not going to do this, but just in case, we had to like be aware of this. But I don't, it's going to take a long time to like get like, and it's going to take some hindsight, I feel like, to really get what Masato Yoshino meant to the Dragon System and what it means in Dragon Gate, just because it's something that it's not just about like, okay, how can we say it in 2021? And it's something that, at least for like the people that personally have worked with him, it's a very hard thing to say. For people who observed him, it's a very hard thing to say. And it's going to be something that I'm actually, in a way, looking forward to 2031, taking a step back 10 years after retirement. And then I feel like that we be able to take things like very much in the whole view, in the way, you know, like just be able to like look back and see it. And of course, with like Yoshino and within the company, it'll be very clear what sort of post-retirement role he may have in this promotion as well. And I feel like that might be the thing that gives us a little bit more of, I don't think that they will ever have like a true answer, because it's such a personal question, but I feel like that there will be more of a accepted answer. Maybe that's still not really the way I'm trying to say this.
I think the reality will have just set into such a point that it'll be able to easier, because this is the biggest domino that has ever fallen in Dragon Gate. Because you can look at wrestlers that have retired, you know, Suwa had left Dragon Gate and then had his retirement show in 2007 and then did a weird comeback. But, you know, Suwa was a Dragon System guy who retired from wrestling. You obviously have the Anthony W. Mori retirement show that I think was at the end of 2010. As a Cork and Hall shows, Anthony W. Mori, nice little mid-card wrestler, but not the foundation of this promotion. You had, you know, Shima, T-Hawk, L. Lindemann, Takahiro Yamamura, those guys left which just, you know, threw the promotion into a tailspin. But it's not like they had, you know, obviously did not have this grand ceremony to wish them well. It was pretty much the exact opposite. So Drangate being, you know, 21 years old, we've never been in this position before. We've never had a retirement of this scale. I think, you know, obviously no one's going to be able to hit the levels that Yoshino has, but we're going to see this, I think, quite a bit over the next few years with, you know, guys like Kness stepping away and maybe Super Shisa finally calling it quits officially. And then you've got, you know, your Genki, Susumu, Kanda, guys that are machines that eventually the machines are going to run out of gas. And this is just, it's new territory for Dragon Gate. It's a very interesting thing to watch because these guys are machines and they are superhuman to some extent. But they will eventually meet their maker. They will eventually have to call it quits. And it's crazy to think that Yoshino is really the first high-profile guy to do that, but he's not going to be the last.
No. And however, I will say, with the exception of very specific people, I don't think we'll see a show like Speedstar Final again. Like this, unless like Ultimo decides to hang up, and I get the sense that Ultimo is just going to keep on going. Like, as much as I love Kness, and I love Kness, he's not getting like a show at Kobe World Cannon Hall for him, and immediately right after Kobe World, right? Like, this is a once in a lifetime event that's going to be upon us at the beginning of August with the Speedstar Final.
Speaking of wrestlers that are getting up there in age, and this is probably the best time to mention this, Dragon Gate Network just uploaded the Susumu and Kness versus SB Kento and Hyo match from the Kness and Gamma 25th anniversary show. I have not had a chance to check that out yet, but I have had a chance on social media to look at the t-shirt that Kness was wearing for this show. This Kineska shirt says, "Realize Full Power, the Bond of Brothers, Kness and Susumu." I don't know where to find this shirt. I have looked on the internet. I do not know where to find it. If you know where to get me a Japanese extra large of this t-shirt, please tweet at me @_inyourcase and let me know. I will pay international shipping for this t-shirt. It is a fucking great t-shirt.
Folks, what you need to do is you need to go like 3 years from now, you need to go to the Osaka area thrift stores, and that's where you might find it.
So you will find one signed by Gamma probably. It's like, oh, it was my homecoming show too. It's technically my apparel.
I mean, Gamma's gonna make the money. I mean, he's gonna chase the bag.
Yes, yeah, that is and of course I have not been to Japan, but I know from people that have. If you want used ring gear and you don't want to be creepy, Gamma's your guy, because obviously the Joshi, look, if your thing is the Joshi world, that's fine. You could buy their gear, just don't tell me about it. If you just want in-ring gear that's been worn, Gamma will hook you up. That man loves to sell the clothes off of his back.
Check out Depot Mart or Totokon and you might be able to find that. Like, those are the two places that are popping in my mind, but Depot Mart more sells gear. Like, you could, like, that's where Ultimo used to sell his masks. So there's options.
Love
out
the hustle.
There.
My favorite thing, and I've said this on the show before, seeing Ultimo Dragon at AEW in 2017, watching this man in the main event win the fall, cut his promo, and then walk from the ring to the merch table and just start hawking out masks is one of my favorite visuals I've ever seen. Didn't go to the back, didn't need a drink of water. This man went from the ring to the table seamlessly.
But did they at least play Desperados as he was walking from the ring to the merch table?
You know, that I don't know, but I will say, and I certainly don't want to encroach on Andrew Rich's territory at Music of the Mat, but watching this Kobe World show, I realized, oh, I don't know any of these theme songs. Guys were coming out for the Battle Royal, and I had absolutely no idea who anyone was until they popped up on camera. I recognized zero of these theme songs.
Speaking of someone who had issues growing out his hair, Case, let's talk about getting rid of it. Support for Open the Voice Gates brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technological developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for our listeners today. 20% off plus free shipping with promo code OTVG at manscaped.com. And, you know, the Perfect Package 3.0 case, we've been talking about this now for a couple of months. We've gotten to put it through the paces. But the thing about the Perfect Package kit is the crop preserver. And the thing about the crop preserver right now is most of this country, we're in the middle of one of the worst heat stretches in recorded history. Like, if you're in the West Coast here. But the crop preserver, what it does for you, Case, it is an anti-chafing ball deodorant moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smartest part of your body? And that's right. Yes, your balls stink.
Mike, I am getting some. I am getting lucky this summer. I'm having a white boy summer. And I attribute all of that not to my quirky personality, not to my broad shoulders. I credit all of that to the fact that I use the crop preserver whenever I leave the house. It is a game changer. It has me feeling more confident. It has me feeling more fresh. It's not even a fake it till you make it. I now suddenly possess the power to know that I am going to be ready at a moment's notice to get it on. The other thing that I love about the Perfect Package 3.0 kit is on that shaver, that Lawnmower 3.0, the LED light for a more precise shave is unbelievable. It's waterproof. You get the little light there. I grew up playing baseball. Mike, I was a high school caliber athlete, okay? I at one point in my life, was a pretty fit individual. I always had terrible depth perception, could never play in the outfield, could never read fly balls well. Well, I had another issue with balls and depth perception, but not anymore with the LED light and the waterproof Lawnmower 3.0. I can't recommend it enough, and that's not to mention the other goodies that you get if you get the Perfect Package.
That's right. You don't just get the crop preserver. You also get the crop reviver. It helps your balls from sweating, stinking, and smelling. And you could also get two free gifts in the Perfect Package, a pair of high-performance boxer briefs to keep your junk feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag to store all of your grooming goodies. And, you know, I'm someone that I had a dop bag case since I was in high school. And for me, that's getting farther away. Like I've now spent more years out of high school than I have in high school. So Manscaped with the bag, you know, I'm starting to travel again. You know, I mean, COVID's up now. I've got a trip ahead of me, and you know, I'm bringing the boys with me. I'm bringing the Manscaped goods with me, and I'm going to be using the shed bag with that. So trim that junk of yours. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code OTVG. Your balls will thank you. Again, 20% off plus free shipping with promo code OTVG at Manscaped. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
When you are shaving your balls, when you are getting intimate, I want you thinking about me and Mike Spears. I want you using the Perfect Package 3.0. Mike, I just got a text from my lady friend as we were recording this. She said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Podcasting." And she has not responded. I somehow feel like that was the wrong answer. We haven't really gone over.
Oh.
We haven't really gone over what I do on Tuesday nights. I told her from the start, I was like, "Hey, Tuesday night, it's a no-go for me. I'm always booked." She didn't really ask a follow-up question. She didn't really say like, "Oh, what do you, are you like working with a charity? Are you like donating to like underprivileged youth in Chicago?" I'm actually kicking back with my boy Mike Spears, and we are talking about the second biggest Japanese wrestling promotion there is. Thank you so much for asking. I have not heard back from her since I answered podcasting. I do feel like that was the wrong answer. The thing that I like about this woman, though, she's been in my apartment numerous times now. I believe this is canon on the show. I think I've mentioned this, that I do have a Gran Hamada Universal Libre show poster from 1991 hanging up in my apartment. I have two wall decorations. I have this Hamada poster and then the three studio albums that Modern Baseball released. I have those framed on my wall. It is psychotic decorations. What I like about her, she has not asked about any of them. And I think that is a great plan. Now, if she asked me, "What am I doing a podcast about?" I think we're close enough at this point to where I can kind of spin it and make it sound cool. Like, oh no, sure. Like I'm like an expert. Like people, like,
I'm a journalist.
Yeah. People actually like respect my opinion on certain things. but I like that she just like saw a poster of shirtless Japanese men on my wall. And she's like, "I'm not going to ask about that. Like whatever he's into, that's fine." I think that's really cool. I look, so far things are going tremendous. I'm a very happy camper right now.
Yeah, as you mentioned this, whenever you bring this up here, I look around my office and I keep all, I think this is canon as well. I keep all my wrestling stuff in one room. It's in my office. And I'm like looking at the stuff here. I'm just like, oh, there's going to be some questions asked. Like you can get away with a Mata poster. But when you have like posters from like a show that Masaki Mochizuki did with Minoru Fujita for Minoru Fujita's 25th anniversary, there are going to be questions. When you have various Lucha Libre masks on your wall, there are going to be questions. So Case, maybe she saw that. It's like, okay, you know, that didn't cross, that didn't like fire any neurons. Like there was no synapse happening here. I'm looking at my room. All kinds of synapses will be happening there. A lot of questions. But I also do have a really awesome framed sketch of the original patents for the baseball bat and the baseball in my office as well. So it's not all just geeky wrestling shit, to be fair.
No, it's also geeky baseball shit, which is obviously such a tremendous improvement over geeky wrestling shit. I watched over the weekend, she was over, we watched RuPaul's Drag Race together. This is a show I had not seen before. First of all, what a show. So many characters, so much fun. But I do feel like now that she's like shown that side of me, I'm like, well, she can probably watch like Dragon Gate USA United Philly. Like I could show her the main event of that and she'd be like, okay, these guys are doing flips. This is kind of cool, I guess. Like it's coming. I'm sure at some point she's going to be over on a Wednesday and I'll be live tweeting her thoughts of AEW Dynamite. Of course, I will not be initiating that. She will have to initiate that herself, but I'm sure it's happening down the road.
I mean, it's all baby steps. Like, you're probably at that point in the relationship now, or the budding relationship, where you're like, okay, here's what happens Tuesday nights, and that might be happening right now. Are there any dots on your cell phone now? Like, this is going to be the thing I'm going to be most interested in for the next 30 to 45 minutes.
I've got nothing, Mike. I have got nothing. Just staring at a blue bubble that says podcasting with a period.
Well, oh, okay. So this isn't an Android iPhone thing. You will be able to
no,
see when...
No, look, no. I'm not dating an Android user. To quote my good friend Sean Sloan, if I see the green bubble, I just assume you're poor. I'm not doing that. It's blue bubble or nothing.
Yeah. Well, you had a nice segue that I butchered because we needed to do the Addery case, but... This Kobe Sambo Hall show that was on June 26th, a lot of stuff kind of happening there. Attendance 350. They haven't run Kobe Sambo Hall since April because of the state of emergency. So I think that's pretty explainable there. Plus having a Masato Yoshino match there as well. Just overall, just off the top of your head, what was your big takeaway from the show on the 26th?
Fun show. I'm really satisfied with the direction of Kobe World. I love everything that's been announced so far. I don't think there was anything that hit my spreadsheet on this show, but I also found everything to be watchable and at times very enjoyable. I went 3 3/4 on the main event. So yeah, a very watchable show.
Yeah, nothing spreadsheet for me. I had 2 3 1/4 matches here, but you know, everything was pretty watchable. It was like one of those things that when I pulled up the file, since I did not watch this live, I saw 3 hours. I was like, okay, either they didn't edit something or there were some hijinks. And boy, were there some hijinks that happened after the semi-main event.
Yeah, absolutely. This was an angle-heavy show in the second part, and I'm okay with that given the angles that took place. Because, Mike, we kind of, I guess I'm actually going to give this credit solely to you. You kind of nailed the... Masaru Yoshino angle that was going to take place on this show. I asked you last week, is there something that Masaru Yoshino can give to Dragon Daya from his feud, from Yoshino's feud with Dragon Kid, that would make sense in storyline? And Dragon Daya gets the From Jungle, since his teacher Dragon Kid had the Cristo. It makes sense in storyline. You nailed that. More power to you.
I mean, it kind of got to a point where it's like, okay, like just process elimination, like it would be tight to see Daya do the lightning spiral, but From Jungle just like it just fit like a glove there. So that was not the only thing that happened there. We'll get to that in a little bit, because boy, Masato Yoshino had a good time in Kobe Sambo Hall, and I'm glad that he had a good time.
Oh, hey, if anybody deserves to kick back and have a good one, if anybody deserves to verbally berate Punch Tamanaga on a microphone at this point in their career, it is Masato Yoshino.
Yeah.
He has earned that.
All right, let's just get into this right now, because this is the highlight of the show. Like the show is watchable. It's just enjoyable. So after the semi-main event, Masato Yoshino bequests the From Jungle to Daya for the reasons that you explained. But then Pancho Managa hit the ring because Pancho Managa decided to be very greedy. And if Yoshino was handing out stuff, he would gladly take anything Masato Yoshino was going to give him.
Yeah, this is classic Punch, biting off more than he can chew. He saw that Punch Tominaga was basically like an 8-year-old at a birthday party where he sees the birthday boy getting presents. And it's like, well, I want that too. And we're like, no, Punch, it's not your birthday. Like, your time will come. We'll get to you. And Punch is like, no, but I am seeing how much fun this is. I would also like to be a part of this. And he asked, to use that metaphor, went to the biggest box that was left and was like, I'm going to take this. And we're like, no, you're not. Punch Tominaga asked for the Sol Naciente, the Lightning Spiral. And Masato Yoshino said no. And Punch, in an even just a more psychotic bout, goes, oh, well, give me your entrance music. And Masato Yoshino once again says no.
Just tremendous. And then right afterwards, he was like, okay, if you want something, you're going to have to prove it. And then he had him run the ropes, and then everyone just left his Dragon Storm blade.
Yeah, that's absolutely tremendous stuff. Punch Tominaga stays winning. It's amazing. I was like, I don't know, his career is just fascinating. Whenever I see Punch, like, even in moments like this, I'm like, this man beat Shima in a singles match on a pay-per-view once. That is so insane to think. they really tried to make Punch a thing, and if you weren't deeply invested in Dragon Gate in the summer of 2014, he's just a comedy character to you. But there was a time where, like, no, Punch might be a thing, and it's just died a death in the funniest way possible.
One of the scariest moments in Dragon System history, I would say. So go over the show. It opened up with a high-end open mic, kind of just doing the same thing that Kyle Katori is saying, I'm the mic worker of the group. And everyone's like, yeah, okay. But I went right into the opening match. It was the high-end team of Yamato and Kagetora versus Don Fuji and the aforementioned Punch Tominaga. Kagetora got the one in 10 minutes and 41 seconds with the Goro Makakari.
Anytime, and we mentioned this last week when we were previewing the show, anytime you get Yamato and Don Fuji on opposing sides, it's going to be a win. And we're in this point in Yamato's career where, two or three years ago, I don't know if this match necessarily has the spark that it did here, but Yamato is still working his ass off on pretty much every single show. And I thought what he and Fuji did here was a lot of fun. Kagetora in high end is just the perfect little, least important guy in the unit. A very painless, very fun opening match.
Yeah, I mean, this was a 3-star flat match. I mean, the big story was the fact that Don Fuji started throwing chairs immediately as his theme was playing. His theme played all the way through and he refused to get in the ring before shoving Punch Tominaga in there. And then, you know, he's had an axe to grind against Yamato since Yamato debuted. Like, this is not a new beef. This is like a 14-year-old beef at this point.
Oh, it's hey, Mike, it is long-term storytelling in the same way that Matt Riddle wanting to high-five Randy Orton is long-term storytelling. Yamato and Don Fuji throwing chairs at one another is in that same vein.
I'm going to believe that that's a storyline there because I do not touch the poop.
Dude, I swear to God, that's like a thing.
Oh, I believe
it. Matt Riddle's like trying to high five Randy Orton and he won't do it. And I think that's the whole story.
But you know,
Akira Tozawa, WWE 24/7 champion. Isn't that a good feeling, Mike? He's been there for 5 years now.
Are you just trying to lay all the bad vibes on me in like a 30-second period?
I'm just like, it speaks to how talented Akira Tozawa is that He is on Monday Night Raw every single week now from allegedly. This is what I've heard. I've seen some GIFs. I'm not saying I sit down and watch the show, but it's a testament to how good he is that they see him as a worthwhile comedy character, which is the quickest way to get on TV is to have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old or the humor of a senile old billionaire. But like, it's just amazing. He's been gone for 5 years, Mike. I don't think he ever wrestled Shun Skywalker. I don't think he ever wrestled Ben K. Think about all the new guys that like Tozawa and SB Kento could be doing their damn thing right now. And this man's wearing a ninja costume in the Thunderdome.
I mean, he's also taking Eichmann Jiro, who's a full kit wanker, to Angels versus Tampa Bay Rays games.
And it is canon that Giroux is a wanker. That is obviously well known. Giroux is the perfect fit for there. I had a little bit more tolerance for Giroux than most people because when he was briefly doing Strong Hearts adjacent stuff, I was like, oh my God, he's perfect with these guys as kind of their traveling opponent. Yeah, he's very talented. He's one of those guys that I think his ceiling is probably good WWE TV worker, and I think that's awesome. I hope he kills it there. The issue is that Akira Tozawa's ceiling is world champion for the second biggest promotion in Japan without a ninja costume. Speaking of Monster Express, Tony Nese, you want him back in the promotion?
I mean, he was on the roster page for another 3 years after he had his two tour.
I'd book that flight tomorrow. Look, there are times where I was critical of Tony Nese. I had a real love-hate with him for a while. He was really good during most of his run in the WWE. Like, because I watched 205 Live for a very long time. I watched 205 longer than most, and Nese was consistently good. If he wanted to come over, I'd get him on a flight tomorrow.
I mean, I feel like that's like a good fit because he doesn't have to talk ever, you know? Like,
yeah.
The real, real choice is have Tony Nese run back the Premier Athlete brand right now. Like, what's Mr. A up to? Like, Andrea, Mr. A? Oh, no. Andrea is selling, what's the last time I saw? Herbal remedies and medicinal marijuana right now.
I just think Tony Nese and High End would actually be a really good fit. If we could get some, like, Yamato Dragon Kid Tony Nese six-mans, I'm fucking into that.
Yeah, and I feel like that him, Benkei, and Keisuke Kuu. Well, Keisuke Kuu can make friends with anyone, apparently. So.
Coolest man in the world.
Coolest man in the world, yeah.
Keisuke Kuu is Dragon Gate's equivalent of the Dos Equis commercial. Keisuke Kuu is the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah. That, I mean, I'm just wondering, like, Case, before your time, there's such thing as a Rolodex. Are you aware at all about what a Rolodex is?
Familiar with the concept. Never owned one, but familiar with the concept.
Well, I mean, neither have I. I mean, we are of generations that I'm imagining, okay, very much easier. His contact list must be insane.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that is something I would love to be like, hey, who's the wildest person in your contact list, Okuda? Just interested. Just kind of want to know. You already had Gackt come to a Dragon Gate show.
Mike, were you familiar with the Netflix original series Slobby's World?
No.
Okay, so there's one season of the show. Look, I loved it. I would recommend it. It's about a show. It's a documentary type show about a guy named Slobby Robbie. He owns vintage stores in Arizona, and his whole thing is he's the king of bootleg Gucci stuff and vintage clothing. And what I need MLW to do is I need them to fly Keisuke Okuda over, and then I will fly Keisuke Okuda to Arizona, and we will go vintage shopping, because I think he would really get a kick out of this Slobby Robbie individual.
Oh, yeah. No, just want to hit some stores with him. Like, with KZ, you take KZ to the record stores. You take Okuda to go out clothes shopping.
I have locations for them in Chicago. I would love to show them around the Wicker Park area. I would love, Court Bauer, if you're listening, let me take the Dragon Gate guys shopping when they get to Chicago.
I mean, speaking of two guys that I would like to hang out with, this was coming up in the second match case. This was what I called the early Mike Spears birthday present singles match. Misaki Mochizuki versus Funky Jackie Kamei. Mochizuki won in 12 minutes and 24 seconds with the Twister. And gotta say, there is something about a Mochizuki match case that as soon as you see him punch someone in the stomach, you know you're in for something.
Oh boy, this what a rough night for Funky Jackie Kamei. And I thought it would be a rough night for him when it would go 6 or 7 minutes, but this match goes 12 and a half minutes, and I feel like, with the exception of a few moves, he took everything Mochizuki had. Like, Kamei looked great on offense when he was on there, but this was a vicious beating from Masaki Mochizuki, and it was thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah, and it had a clear purpose, and it took a while to get to the purpose, which was get the crowd behind Funky Jackie Kamei. Like he got the deep two counts that really got the crowd into it. But yeah, no, this was just seeing how long he could persevere. And, you know, with Dragon Gate time limits, I mean, farther than most he did in a as a young wrestler against Masaaki Mochizuki. But I mean, if you've seen a Masaaki Mochizuki bullying match, this is what it was. It was a solid one, not one of the best ones, I would say, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went 3.25.
Yeah, I'm at 3.5 because I really loved the finish of Kamei slaps Mochizuki in the face, and I'm sitting on my couch and I went, oh no, because I didn't know what the receipt was going to be, but I knew the receipt wasn't going to be pleasant. And then sure enough, Mochizuki slaps him in the face in this way that I've never really seen anyone get slapped in the face before. Mochizuki put his entire body into this slap and took him down there and then hit him with the twister for the win. Really slow start. It started off slow, and I go more in line with what you thought of this match, which is it was a deliberate pace to get the crowd behind Kamei in some form or fashion. I do wonder, just because of the way this match started, where again it was a little squirrely for a second.
Yeah, it was a little clunky.
If Mochi, being the veteran, seeing what happened to Kamei and Cork and Hall earlier this month, even though that show seems like it happened a million years ago, it was just earlier this month, slowed things down, grabbed the headlock, faced the hard cam, and said, okay, we're going to take some deep breaths, and we're going to go on with our match. Because it did start slower than the usual Mochizuki beatdown, but by the end, it got to a point that was still thoroughly enjoyable.
Absolutely, and then the post-match, Mochizuki, you know, he's a gentleman. Well, like, if you were to ask me who's the most gentlemanly person in this roster, it's Mochizuki. I mean, he's just he just has that countenance about him. He offers his hand to the youngster, and Kamei smacks it away, and Mochizuki went, well, okay, and left the ring.
It's sick. I love a little bit of edge on Kamei. The one thing that I wanted to ask you about him, we've obviously been big Turtle Chant supporter since the beginning. I love him in Natural Vibes. Like I've been saying on the show, I think Natural Vibes is the most complete unit in all of wrestling. I know who they are. I know what they are. I know what their purpose is. Kamei's gear. Can we get a vibe check on his gear? What do you think about it?
Well, at least he's leaving the overalls down. You know?
Yes, we've learned from Taiji Ishimori and to a lesser extent Masato Yoshino about the importance of keeping the straps down.
Yeah, the straps are down. I mean, it's very clearly like cribbing off KZ, you know, especially like when KZ would wear the work suit and it would have like all kinds of like spray paint scrawlings over it. And then he went to the overalls that had some scrawlings on it. Like it's cribbing off that, which for now is okay for Kamei. But eventually I feel like Kamei needs to get like actual gear that's his and not like an homage to his unit leader. For now, it's okay with me. It's not great. Like, to be fair, it's not great.
Yeah, I'd like to see, assuming this unit goes for a while, and I anticipate it too, I'd like to see what the second version of his gear looks like, because I'm lukewarm on this. I feel like I love the gear that he came into the company with, those gray baggy pants that he was using, and there's just, like, this gear isn't flashy. He's wearing overalls, basically, and yeah, you've got the graffiti on them, but I don't think they totally match his aesthetic, and I was fixating on that for a little bit of this match, so I just want to know your thoughts there, because everyone else in the unit, from KZ to Shimizu to Horiguchi to Susumu, I think their gear works perfectly. Kamei, I'm not crazy about.
You know, it's something that, you know, give him time, and he might kind of define his own kind of look in a way. I mean, we've seen how drastically both SB Kento and Hip Hop Kakuta changed their gear when they turned heel, so I'm not too concerned about it. I do think the refresh when it comes will be very interesting to see, though.
Yeah, I don't think the gear's holding him back, but I also don't think it's doing him any favors, if that makes sense.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely dead on that. Up the Royal Sanbo for this show was KZ, UT, Ryo Saito, Super Shisa, Konamawa Chikawa, Sachioko Boy, Yosuke San Maria, Problem Dragon, La Estrella, Ho Ho Loon, Diamante, and Die Inferno. The final two were KZ and Diamante. KZ won with a Hurricane Rana out of the Vuelta finale in 12 minutes and 33 seconds.
The final two were KZ and Diamante, but I should mention the first man out in this match was Super Shisa. And when I saw that, I was like, here we go. 2006 Royal Rumble, Rey Mysterio Jr. goes the distance. We're doing the same thing with Super Shisa here. This man's going to Hurricane Rana KZ over the top rope and win this Royal Sambo Battle Royal. And I was devastated when that did not happen.
Yeah, yeah. Instead, we got a little flash of Prime Zone with him and UT, and that was about it. I mean, I'm sad to report that whatever magic Konamawa Chikawa had with the Royal Sanbo, it's over now. He got in and immediately, before he could even stand up, was pinned. So that's done. But other than that, I mean, you had the Estrella and Diamante Barts, which we know how great their chemistry are and how great Diamante is with La Estrella. But outside of that, this probably, like, this was fine, but it probably was the least good. I was going to say worse, but that's not fair to say because it was fine. But this was the least good Royal Sanbo so far, in my opinion.
Interesting. I'm higher on this than you. I think the Sanbo that they ran that wasn't in Sanbo Hall, the other Kobe venue, whatever that place was called, that was March, maybe? What month did they run not Sanbo Hall?
March.
Yeah, God, that was so long ago. I was not crazy about that Battle Royal. I thought that one kind of lacked any oomph. This one, you had, like you said, you had UT and Super Shisa having an abridged Prime Zone match. They did about a minute of Yave stuff that was awesome, which went straight into Ryo Saito in UT doing some tricked out grappling, which really made me want to see Saito go back to the orange singlet for a night, turn back the clock to T2P and grapple with UT. I don't know what venue, I don't know what excuse we need to have to make that happen, but I would really like to see that at some point because I really like their chemistry in this match. Then, like you mentioned, and it's worth noting, not only did Diamante and Estrella immediately pair off once they got in the ring, but they entered at the same time. Like, this was a very deliberate decision to get these two in the ring at the same time so Estrella could do his spots. They look great. And then you end up with KZ and Diamante at the end, and I would say this has about a 1% chance of happening. I don't anticipate it too, but God, could you imagine if KZ wins the Dreamgate at Kobe World, some sort of KZ versus Diamante, like a Cork and Hall defense Dreamgate match? That match sounds so intriguing to me just because I really, really like their chemistry here. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, but seeing KZ and Diamante in any sort of singles capacity really opened my eyes. I was like, I like the way this looks. This is very enjoyable.
Yeah, the way that I think that happens is if we want to workshop it out, it's probably would have been like Diamante's farewell to the promotion. You know, like, what happened with UHA? You know, I could see that kind of being the situation there. But yeah, no, Diamante, like, it's something that probably the most improved wrestler in the world over the period of COVID, you know, just because, like, it's something that he went from being like, oh, he's here, he's kind of a liability, to now, like, just being a highlight and everything. And I do have written down my notes. When Estrella and Diamante came out together, I was like, oh, one, Diamante has a theme now. That's tight. And two, they mash up the themes when they come out together, and La Estrella's theme and Diamante's theme kind of go together.
Yeah, no, this was a very fun sort of day for me, learning all of these entrance themes, and again, they mix them, so I really have like 2 seconds to go, okay, this is so-and-so's theme, this is so-and-so's theme. I had no idea who anybody was, and that was a very fun guessing game for me.
Do you know that Masato Yoshino music starts with Speed Star? It's like
that one. I do know Speed Star, the Dragon Kid song, I think I know Yamato's Spirit. That's good. Yes. Shit. KZ Time, definitely, and the group R.E.D. song.
All right,
those I've got. Delight. Gun to my head, could not tell you what Susumu Yokosuka's theme song was, and he's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. Could not even begin to guess what that sounded like. And I'm a music guy. I don't care about wrestling entrances, I guess.
Like, to be fair, the PA system was cranked up in Sanbo Hall, I noticed, because you could actually, like, make out individual lyrics that KZ is rapping. And boy, I'm looking forward to one day sitting down with Andrew Rich and talking about the new version of It's KZ Time 2021, because the common refrain, and I'm just going off memory, so I'm right around this, is like, hey, everybody, it's 2021, and that means it's KZ time. What is KZ time? Let me show you. Just
bars, Mike Spears. This man spits fire.
Yeah, and after the match, after he won, he cut a promo. I did not see any translations for this promo, but I'm assuming this was a Kobe World build promo. Did you see anything about that?
No, but I think that's a very safe bet to say that he was just building up to the Shun Skywalker match.
Right. And then we had the pre-intermission match. This was a interesting match when they announced it. It was the Masquerade team of Jason Lee and Kota Minenora reuniting, going against the unaffiliated team of Zushi Kanda and Takashi Yoshida. Minenora submitted Kanda in 10 minutes, 5 seconds with the Engranaje. And just like off the top, when we talked about this match last week, it was all going to depend on, all right, is the unaffiliated side hold up there in their deal? And I thought they both brought their working shoes. I thought this was I was prepared for this up until the semi-main event, the main event to be my match of the night.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, I was not as high on this as you were. Good effort from all four guys. It didn't light my world on fire, though, so you have the floor.
It just really over-delivered. It was something where, as we saw with the Buddy Cop team, that it was like, okay, how much is it going to be Mochizuki? And then kind of throughout the team, we kind of realized, like, okay, Yoshida really works as, like, this babyface kind of character. And then we were going to wait and see. It's like, now they're no longer Twin Gate champions. Is that just going to go away? And no, he kept with it. Kanda, as we, like we've said for like the last few years, babyface veteran Kanda is a whole lot of fun. I was surprised how much both of these guys were willing to be thrown around by Kota Minora in this match, because boy, Minora got to do all of his suplexes. And, you know, it was a fun, like, 3.5-star 10-minute match for me.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I would really like for them to dust off the old Summer Adventure Tag League heading out of Kobe World, and for them to do that this year, because it's been 5 years since the last Summer Adventure Tag League. And I think between Minora and Lee being a team, let's throw the unaffiliated duo here of Kanda and Yoshida together. Ishida Sakamoto, Shimizu Susumu, Benkei Dragon Kid. I think Dragon Daya La Estrella would be an interesting combo. SB Kento and Hyo would be very interesting. Even something like Natural Vibes is a bunch of interesting pairings, because you could do Horiguchi and Kamei if you wanted to. I like those guys. You have enough, I think, interesting combinations to do 12 different teams in a Summer Adventure Tag League, and I would really like to see that. If anything, whoever comes out of World as the Twin Gate champion, you can then use the Summer Adventure Tag League as a vehicle for Minora and Lee to get that tag team title shot, because I do think they're going to lose the Triangle Gate belts at Kobe World.
It's something where the Summer Adventure Tag League was always such a problem for, because usually at Kobe World, at least over the last few years, it was a big babyface win. Like, they like having babyfaces win at the main event of Kobe World. And then, as we saw, like, I mean, we talked about them earlier, Akira Tozawa's departure right after the Summer Adventure Tag League 2016 was like a 1-2 punch that I'm at least of the belief that Yamato's title reign never really recovered from. So maybe that's something that, like, I think there is a place for a tag team league. I love, like, there are some tremendous Summer Adventure Tag Leagues in years past. I just don't know if you do that in August now. Like, if you ask me, the time I would do it during the cold season. Do it between January and March, because that's
what I was just about to say. Sorry to cut you off there, but either kicking off the year with it, I think, would be interesting, or even post Champion Gate into Dead or Alive. I think you have a period to do it there. Doing it after World is a tough sell, given what happened 5 years ago with the Yamato title run.
Right. Yeah. It's just one of those things that I think there is. Like, and then I was talking with Lorenzo on Twitter and had the idea, because he brought up to me, like, oh, you knowing what you like, you need to make sure you watch UT and Shisa and this Royal Sambo. And I did, and I loved it. And my response is, maybe instead of the Summer Adventure Tag League, Summer Adventure Technique League.
Shit, Mike Spears, you are onto something there.
I mean, you mentioned Ryo Saito, bring out the orange singlet. You know, let's see. Let's get down to the grabs, and let's not do, like, the UWFI thing. Like, let's just see. Lucha Libre Classica.
No, like, that's working so well for other promotions. Let's do the UWFI thing.
Hey, my favorite fake MMA match that I've seen over the last, like, 18 months was Wardlow versus Jake Hager, because Wardlow decided to do a Hurricanrana in the middle of it.
No comment. But no, the Summer Adventure Technique League, God, that would be phenomenal. There's, again, the roster turnover is so huge from the last few Summer Adventure Tag Leagues we've had. 2016, I was thinking about this a few days ago. One, in 2016, Ben K was in it as Futa Nakamura. So it's been that long since we've had a Summer Adventure Tag League. And the 2016 version, Cork and Hall was under construction when they did it. So they ran a day-night doubleheader at Shinjuku Face. So it's been 6 years since they've had a Summer Adventure Tag League show in Cork and Hall. And for whatever reason, I fixated on that yesterday and thought that was just the wildest thing.
I mean, it's kind of insane, especially when you think about Summer Adventure Tag League shows in Cork and Hall. Like, maybe they were like, you know what? We should maybe avoid Cork and Hall. It seems kind of cursed for this tournament.
I guess, but I don't know. The 2014 Summer Adventure Tag League Corkin show, I'm going to pull up that card.
Oh, it's a great one.
Real quick, just because that is the show that has, Shima and Gamma versus HNT Hawk, Flamita versus KZ for the Brave Gate belt, Hulk, Dragon Kid, and Mochi versus Tozawa, Yoshino, and Shingo in a six-man, and then a loser resurrection survival eight-man tag captain's fall match. With the Jimmys, Horiguchi, Susumu, Kanda, and Naoki Tanizaki against Doi, Yamato, Cyberkonga, and Mondai Ryu. That was a great show. And that Osaka 06 versus Millennials tag match, if you have not seen that, you need to track that down.
Yeah, that's a really slept on historically tag match. And I mean, Osaka Zenro kind of what it is, a slept on tag team in the Dragon Gates. Like in the tenure, I mean, like, they were really solid at times. Like, Gamma is Gamma, but those two together, like, maybe it is the fact that they are friends and you have the Osaka guys together, but they had some magic.
Let's talk about this Speedstar Final Countdown and Kobe match, Mike. What did you think of this?
Oh, gosh. I absolutely adored this. This was the Tea Tree Cup 8-man tag team match, Speedstar Final Countdown and Kobe. It was Doi Yoshi teaming up with Masquerades, Shun Skywalker, and Dragon Daya versus REDs, BB Hulk, Kai, SB Kento, and Hyo. Yoshino won at the Soul Naciente in 18 minutes and 5 seconds on Hyo. I thought this was really, really fun. I like the fact that at the jump, Hyo is still on his big brain bullshit and was like trying to tell everyone that their brain was zero and that the other team was zero, that RED was 100. And the fact that Yoshino and Doi was like, yeah, we're dumb, cracked me up.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff here. It was also, and I find this to be worth mentioning, this match went 18 minutes and 5 seconds. If you look at the rest of the Masato Yoshino matches in 2021, he had the five-minute draw in April, and then the homecoming match was 15 minutes 38 seconds. The match at Dead or Alive was 11 minutes 56 seconds. The match in Fukuoka was 14:41. The match in Hokkaido was 15:19. In the match earlier this month in Corrigan Hall was 14:50. So this was his longest match yet, and I will say this gave me some hope that once we hit the end of July and that first day of August, Yoshino can turn back the clock one more time.
Yeah, I mean, I went 3 3/4 on this. Like, I thought Yoshino looked great in this. I mean, he managed to do the Doomsday Sling Blade for the first time, and gosh, it might be the final gate match the last time he was able to do that, and he was moving around really well. The other thing about this match, Shun Skywalker and SBK facing off a bunch
Jesus
in this.
Jesus Christ,
spicy.
Mike. God damn, SBK so good. And it's what I will continue to say. I think his end ring is the least evolved of everything he does, which is frightening to think about. But oh my God, these two together and SB Kento and Dragon Daya. Like, we mentioned this last week, and then I saw on Twitter, Alan Forel mentioned that he really liked the SBK Dragon Daya chemistry, which means you know it's a good take when Alan's co-signing it as well. But I just the Dreamgate and SB Kento, it's going to happen sooner rather than later, and I can't believe it. But you watch him in there against Shun, and if you didn't know that SB Kento was a 21-year-old, you wouldn't think anything of it. You would think this is a guy primed for a main event position.
Yeah, and it's something where I mean, this was going to happen with him, with how they ran Dead or Alive and how clear it was going to be that he was going to kind of he wouldn't be pulling focus for a bit. And, you know, he's still having these like tremendous matches. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, he's really, like, as we've seen in June, he's really like things maybe have fallen into place in a way. So I'll be real interested to see how this kind of permeates through August, because yeah, he has that chemistry with Daya that we talked about. He has chemistry with Shun. Like, if Shun gets out of Kobe World, SB Kento is waiting for him. And I think that could be a very bold match to put at Dangerous Gate, but I can't discount it out of hand.
Oh, that's the interesting thing with SB Kento. If his first Dreamgate challenge, let's say it happens, let's say we know it's happening this year, and we don't, but let's just play the game of we know at some point in 2021, SB Kento is challenging for the Dreamgate title. If it's against KZ, I think you have to give the nod to KZ. If it's SB Kento versus Shun Skywalker, I think that means SB Kento is winning the belt, which is a crazy proposition, but under the very vague circumstances that I just laid out there, I think that is the far more likely reality.
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating. Like, it's something that I talked about this with Yoshino just earlier. Looking back at the first 3 years of SB Kento's career is going to be really fascinating. Just because, like, and you can't even, like, say, like, Okada did this, because Okada went on excursion, and then he came back to be this world beater, but out of the gates, like, the closest comp is Utami Hayashishita, and Utami only got the red belt the last year, so it took her several years into her career, but we're talking about someone who, I mean, unless it happens at Final Gate, and this thing you're proposing, you're talking about someone that before he has his second anniversary show could be Dreamgate champion.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to happen, but you pitched me that idea, and I can't say for certainty that it won't. And this is a guy who, you know, I mentioned this with Hip Hop Kakuta all the time, because he has not wrestled a match in front of a normal crowd. He debuted in an empty arena and then has only worked clap crowds. SB Kento's had 3 months of real crowd interaction.
Right.
And I, you know, we've heard it at times where fans have broken protocols because of things SB Kento has done, both when he was wrestling as Kenta Kabune and then later as SB Kento. I know when these crowds are able to make noises again, this is a guy that's going to be getting white hot reactions wherever they go.
Absolutely. It's going to be a real fascinating fall for him. Just like, not even around the title shot, but that idea of he lost dead or alive, that usually is something that either says you're being cycled down for a bit or you're getting in this big push. Obviously, for him, it seems like that they went with the cycle down path with him. His fall, especially given the fact that we're kind of in stasis in the unit shuffle. Eita is doing his thing with Nosawa right now, but that is not going to be a permanent thing. But eventually there's going to be this big RED storyline. And, you know, as soon as it seems like that everything's in the clear, it's going to be real fascinating because SB Kento will be one of the prime players in this.
Well, it's funny you say he was cycled down, because I think it feels that way because of how hard he was being pushed. But then you have to remember, a month after Dead or Alive, he's in the semifinals of King of Gate.
Right.
And then a month after that, or not even a month after that, he's now challenging for the Triangle Gate belts in a well-built and seemingly important match at Kobe World, where I have no doubt that he is going to be getting the winning fall in that match. And that is somehow cycled down compared to how he was treated at the start of the year.
Right, yeah. And when you say cycle down, like, there's really are a couple paths coming out of Dead or Alive cage matches, and his wasn't the big one, you know, like that's what I'm saying. But yeah, no, it's gonna be fascinating, especially because yeah, I at this point, 4 weeks out, I'm with you. I think he's gonna lock on the SB shooter onto Jason Lee in that match.
Tremendous stuff. That's gonna be so good.
Yep. And then, speaking about tremendous trios matches, the return of the three-way six-man tag team match, the Dragon System specialty. We had High End's Dragon Kid and Bensuke of Benkei and Keisuke Okuda versus Natural Vibes, King Shimizu and Genki Horiguchi and Susumu Yokosuka, and then Eita and Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto. So really fascinating. You had a guy and then established tag teams on each of these trios. The two falls of the match were Shimizu pinning Kaito Ishida with his version of the Lagmage draw is called the Zuki no Yafune, or I remember they were calling it the Shimizu style thing, but I guess that's a proper name now, in 18 minutes and 5 seconds. And then we had just another minute, and Benkei pins Susumu with a spear in 1907. So High End wins this match, but Natural Vibes gets the first fall directly on the Twin Gate champion Kaito Ishida, and that set up an interesting 2 days for the Twin Gate coming ahead at the end of the month and into August. It will be Dragon Kid and Benkei getting a title shot but it will also be Susumu Yokosuka and King Shimizu getting a title shot. King Shimizu and Susumu Yokosuka are getting it at Kobe World. Then Dragon Kid and Bing K are getting it at Speedstar Final.
Let's talk about the booking of that real quick before I talk about this match, because I don't have a ton to say on the main event of this Kobe show. Love the booking of the Twin Gate in this particular instance. I love that it's going to be Ishida and Sakamoto in a 2-on-2 match against Yokosuka and Shimizu, which are two guys that I don't think they've ever teamed before, and it's a really exciting team to look at. So I love that. And then going into the next night, and again, you're going to hear this a lot over the next month on this show, because I'm afraid that other people are going to say things otherwise, but the second night in Kobe, which is not Kobe World Night 2, it is Speedstar Final, and as of right now, we have no inclination that there will ever be another two-night Kobe Festival in the summer of a year again. Speedstar Final, the winners of that match going on to Dragon Kid and Ben K, which is another really fun first-time team. I'm all about this. I think this is the most exciting way to do it. And I think Ishida and Sakamoto versus Susumu and Shimizu could be an outstanding, outstanding match.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, all three combinations, what we could have, the three matches that we could potentially be having over this, if it is the fact that RED wins the first night and then goes up against Dragon Kid and Bing K, or if it is Natural Vibes winning, I think all three of those matches are pretty fascinating in their own way. I think that Shimizu has great chemistry both with Ben and with Dragon Kid, so that would work. And of course, as we saw in this match, really the two stars of this match were Bing K and Susumu Yokosuka. Everyone can calm down. Bing K is back and being featured now in this company in a big way. And
there's a bunch of stuff here that people need to calm down on, because you not only have Bing K, who just looks like a total world beater here, but they paired off, and I thought this was interesting, they paired off the three big guys quite a bit in this match. You had Sakamoto and Shimizu and Bing K together. And despite the fact that he did a dancing entrance, I'll tell you what, King Shimizu sure looked like a fucking ass kicker in there with Ben K and Kazuma Sakamoto.
I mean, best shape of his career, ass kicker, getting his groove on. It is good to be King Shimizu right now. Like, he looked fantastic. I mean, as I've said, just offhandly, if you can't take it, fast forward 90 seconds. Like, and then it's going to be the Shimizu that you know. And yes, he'll bust out a dance, but I mean, Shimizu has always been, you know, a little bit of a wacky guy. So what difference is that between him going like his big pump up for the shot put slam? This one has hip gyrations.
The fact that Shimizu has kept the Lamahi straw in his arsenal, the fact that he used that to pin Ishida, I popped huge for that. I think that's so awesome that he's keeping that going forward. That is a tremendous flash pin for him, one that I would imagine in a normal world would get a big reaction pretty much any time he busted out. So that's a huge win. The other thing that I really liked in this match was the Ishida-Susumu pairing. We've seen these guys have a singles match before, where Ishida beat Susumu and then went on to hold the Brave Gate title for 364 days. Here they went at it once again. And the spot that I love that Susumu does, and he does it primarily against Mochizuki, where Susumu's throwing the lariats and Mochizuki is kicking them away. He did that with Kaito Ishida here. And oh my God, were they putting everything they had into these strikes. Susumu was whipping his arm forward and Kaito Ishida was kicking the hell out of his arm. I thought that very brief spot, but I thought that looked absolutely terrific.
Yeah, this all rocked. And did you notice that Ishida sold the knee afterwards? I see you, Kaito, doing that. But it was something that unlike the traditional three ways, this did not start off all at sprint. It took a while to get going. Really, the flashpoint was when Bing got tagged into the match. And then we had the Susumu Ishida pairing, and then really down the final stretch the match became about Bing K and Susumu Yokosuka, and the two of them just went at it, and you know, it was awesome to see. And you know, came away 3 3/4. This will not make any list of the best three-way six-man tags, but you know, for a Kobe Sambo Hall show, I'm perfectly happy having that there.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that just for whatever reason they've moved away from doing in Cork and Hall. I don't really get it. It's cool that Sambo gets these types of matches now, but yeah, 3 3/4 for me as well.
And then afterwards we had all the challenges and everything was set up there, and that was it for Kobe Sambo Hall. really fun show, as we said. Nothing world-beating, but a lot of important steps were taken on the path to Kobe World and Speedstar Final.
Yeah, no, very enjoyable show. Like I said, nothing hitting the spreadsheet, but everything worthwhile.
And looking ahead, they are touring through. They are not touring right now. They'll be touring the 3rd and the 4th. They'll be in Shizuoka and Fukui. 7th, they'll be up in Nagoya. 9th, they'll be returning to the network with Cork and Hall. 10th, they'll be in Shizuoka. 11th, they'll be back in KBS Hall. And then closing out the month, they will have one more show in Kobe Sambo Hall on the 22nd. And then the two-night doubleheader, Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival 2021 on the 31st and Speedstar Final on August 1.
Big month ahead. Really one of the bigger months we've ever had in the history of Dragon Gate. The, of course, Masato Yoshino retirement. Kobe World, which is loaded. I mean, at this point, we have our big matches. Kobe World, July 31st. Kaisuke Okuda versus Genki Horiguchi for the Brave Gate belt. Dragon Daya, Jason Lee, and La Estrella versus SB Kento, Diamante, and Dia Inferno for the Triangle Gate belts. Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto versus Susumu Yokosuka and King Shimizu for the Open the Twin Gate Championships. And of course, your main event, Shun Skywalker, defending the top prize in the promotion, the Open the Dream Gate Championship. And he is doing that against KZ.
It's interesting that you look at the big matches and KZ's the oldest person. I don't know Diamante's age.
I guess you got Susumu.
Susumu and Kiki. I take back that point. I was going to make a point about the youth revolution there being unfocused, but I could regear this case. Watch me. We are not seeing any of the big six in title matches, which we're kind of expecting, but we're also, Masaki Mochizuki is not really in a featured match as well. Ryo Saito, not really doing that. Yamato, Big Six, of course. It's going to be interesting how they piece together this lower card on the show, because I'm assuming there'll be three more matches, but getting everyone in those three matches will be really interesting to see.
You mentioned no Big Six. Even just with the tone of this promotion this year, Aita. I don't think... That's what I was going to say.
Sorry.
No. But with the tone of this promotion this year, I don't think it's an indictment on Aita, but all of a sudden you look around, Ada's been with the promotion for 10 years and you go, oh, he's kind of old now. Like, it's just, and it's not that Aita's old. He's, you know, in his early 30s, if that, but it's just the youth movement is absolutely insane.
Yeah. And it's something where, like, we've talked about this before. There now is Perros del Mal de Japón. I mean, I don't see much different with this than what Mochizuki does with M's Alliance right now. It seems like that he is kind of just keeping busy until they're going to deal with this RED thing. Aita doesn't turn 30 until the end of October.
Jesus Christ. I didn't realize he was that young.
And last year was all about Aita. Last year was Aita's year. And he is not in a featured match, which makes sense with how everything is going, but it's just kind of it's really interesting to take a step back and look at what Kobe World is going to shape up to be now that we are about 4 weeks out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think that show is going to be excellent. We're going to say goodbye to Masato Yoshino on August 1st. That's going to be, in my personal life, a very busy weekend for me. We're going to have to figure out the coverage for that, but I'm looking forward to it because those shows are going to be well worth staying up into the wee hours of the night for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you want to hit on before we got out of here?
No, sir. Mike Spears, let's go home.
So you could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case _ in your case. You can follow me at Fujiheya. Thank you all for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back next time. Take care.